Hi, this is Greg Schultz of ServerStorage.io. Welcome to today's podcast, where we will be joined by our guest, Nick Rockwell, the CIO and CTO of the New York Times. Our conversation today is going to take a look at serverless, around DevOps, around both IT and business transformation, along with some related topics. Nick, tell us, in your role as a CIO, CTO, wearing two hats, in this era of software-defined everything, talk to us a little bit about both business transformation, business going digital, and not just a focus on IT, but also that transformation of IT becoming more business-savvy, business-focused, business-aware, along with some of the constraints, some of the things that you have to deal with, both custom software, but also packages.
Well, I think if you're doing transformation, then do transformation. That's the way that I think about it, and I apply the same basic thinking across the business. Now, so in other words, if there's a better way, let's consider a better way. If there are lessons we can learn from, like as you say, kind of the software-defined world, the cloud world that we can apply anywhere in the business, we should do that. I think obviously there are constraints, amongst them when we're dealing on the enterprise side. If we're talking about applications, we're typically working with package apps that have a lot more constraints on them. We don't have the ability to do as much sort of custom engineering as we otherwise would. But I think it's been quite helpful and interesting to actually bring kind of the same perspective to the whole, to both sides and to the whole job.
In your role, wearing those multiple hats, CIO and CTO, tell us about some of the challenges, but also some of the rewards that you're seeing as part of this transformational journey.
Ideas, I would say like sort of product management ideas over to the corporate side of the house, and particularly the enterprise productivity side of the house, I think it's been fun and energizing for the whole team and also opens up a lot of potential.
Let's go back and revisit that transformation and about how IT needs to transform, not just that focus around digital technology, about aligning themselves with that business and about leveraging core tradecraft skills, experiences, knowledge. I mean, things like fundamental software engineering, tie those into your organization.
I mean, absolutely. And when I hear that sort of language, or when I feel it or encounter it in my business, I always ask the question, like, well, why weren't we to begin with? Like, why were we ever not business-minded? And shouldn't that be true of everybody in the business? Now, obviously, people have their focus and everyone has a job to do, but I think everything that IT is doing is supporting the business in some, highly impactful way. So I think I would say we always should have been thinking that way to begin with. I think it's a bit clearer in the digital world. Let's use a more specific example. Let's say when you're working with a SaaS provider or the cloud, the sort of line between service levels and cost is much clearer and easier to find, or not between, but the association between the two, much easier to find, and that I think encourages us to be business-minded. I actually would say I also see a transition in the other direction. I do see a lot of senior technology management that has been successful over the years by being business-minded first and foremost. And now I see pressure to sort of bring engineering back into the picture a little bit more strongly. And again, particularly on the CIO side of the house, I think my experience coming in as sort of a product engineer by background has been, I think it's been quite helpful. And that a lot of the engineering challenges haven't been looked at as closely or in the range of possible solutions hasn't been as broad at some time. So I think the opposite is also really bringing an engineering perspective back into some of the more sleepier corners of the tech environment has been quite helpful.
there's this challenge around metrics. Organizations, you know, some organizations seem to thrive on focusing around the metric, management by spreadsheet. Let's talk a little bit about that other aspect. In other words, that experience of the business, that knowledge, that those things beyond the metrics, things beyond just simple cost or ROIs or TCOs, looking at value. And how do you go about gauging that? How do you gain that insight with the software, but also with the people who aren't software people? How do you get them to see, how do you get the business people to see value?
I couldn't agree more. I think like cost is always the wrong yardstick unless it's paired with value. So, we need to be thinking in terms of value all the time. And that's, again, a lesson that you don't learn exclusively on the product engineering side, but that one certainly can. And you have to think about, you know, not how much this, if you're trying to create a feature in a product, how much it costs is one thing, but what's the value that it can potentially produce is really the determinant factor in how you prioritize that. So I think it's very true. The other thing I would say is that, you know, for many engineering disciplines, cost is just another constraint. If you're doing civil engineering and you're designing a bridge, cost will always be a constant constraint that's present throughout the whole design process. And that's the way that, you know, we need to think when we're doing it. So, again, I think thinking as an engineer and problem solving as an engineer with cost as an important variable is the way that I like to approach, and I like my team to approach things.
Nick, one of the things I routinely hear, and I'm sure that you see it every day in your role as a CIO, CTO at the New York Times, is around cost. There's a real focus around cost. And I think most people are tunnel visioned on cost cutting as opposed to removing complexity. But I think they may also be missing out on value. Tell us a little bit about your take, your perceptions about cost, maybe some organizations or the industry at large, what they should be doing. In other words, instead of that lowest, cheapest per unit, say a penny per line of code, and you need 10 versions of that code to get it right, maybe paying more value, like 5 cents for a line of fully debugged functional code. What are some of the challenges? What are some of the things that organizations could and should be doing? Is it more proof of concepts, PLCs, prototypes, gaining experience?
Yeah, well, one of the hardest things about being a technology executive is that I actually don't believe there's any kind of metrics or any way to unit price software. So whether it's lines of code or story points or hours, none of them are any good in determining whether you're going to get value out of the work, which is super hard to deal with and also super hard for people who don't do software to understand and accept. So you end up getting in a lot of arguments about this, but unfortunately it's true. So as you said, I mean, I could buy a million lines of code, and if the job could be done with 10,000, not only would it be cheaper, it'll be better, easier to maintain. You know, there's a million advantages. So, you know, that it's generally, any kind of volume is actually generally a bad thing. So it's super hard to measure.
Great. Thanks, Nick. Hey, let's tie this back to the business. IT needs to know about the business. For example, at New York Times, you know, you talked about the focus around that metric that really doesn't reflect software well, particularly unit cost. I mean, at the New York Times, you must have moved on beyond looking at the number of words per piece or words per article or words per page or minutes in a video or audio. I mean, is that part of that transformation?
No, I completely agree, and that's why, again, another challenge for technology management is it's never enough to rely on some metrics. They can be a useful guide, but at the end of the day, there's no substitute for just for experience and the ability to dig into a software project, to a tough decision that's been made on a vendor selection or buy versus build analysis, and every case tends to be different. So, unfortunately, there's no shortcut. You just have to roll up your sleeves, dig in, understand the situation, use your judgment. Good design is the best way to avoid cost.
So part of the solution, I'm assuming, then is more proof of concepts, more prototyping, more learning, more experiencing, gaining that insight, gaining and enhancing one's tradecraft skills for learning the craft to support the business, translating technology to support the business.
Yep. So absolutely. And then, you know, on the other hand, like a certain amount of design has to be an iterative process, and you often need to get into a problem, play with it a little, prototype it a little to understand, you know, to come up with the best solution. But finding that balance between sort of exploratory work and, you know, and landing on a good design and actually getting something done is also part of the art. in a nutshell, you know, despite the hype and the talk, I actually feel that serverless is undervalued and sort of it's under discussed and it's under hyped at the moment. And I think that the potential for, you know, the potential impact of real serverless platforms is huge and possibly greater than the impact of like cloud so far. And I base that on a few things. I think, first of all, one of the sort of features of the typical cloud implementation we have today is that the customer is responsible for, so I'm going to rent a bunch of instances, and, you know, if they're idle, that's my problem. And, you know, and that may or may not be, mean that there's actually like idle processors and memory and I/O cards and stuff sitting there up in the cloud, like not being used, or it depends on what they're doing behind the scenes. But from my perspective, I bought a bunch of idle capacity. In a proper serverless environment, capacity utilization, resource utilization is managed by the platform, and they're going to do a way, way better job. They're just better at it. They're better capitalized. They can invest more, you know, in good scheduling and good resource allocation. They're going to have a view at, they're going to have much larger workloads to work with. And I think it's probably not unreasonable to say that utilization should be 5 to 10 times greater than they are in an instance-based world. So right there, there's just like raw, better utilization of the underlying resources that should yield a lot of value, hopefully some of which will be shared with, you know, with the user. That's number one. Number two is there's also, in a good serverless environment, there's a mountain of work that you no longer need to do. And that's all the scaling and availability work at a minimum, plus a lot of infrastructure design that you no longer are responsible for. So that's just a direct benefit. And then the third and maybe least obvious benefit, which is a little more speculative, is that, you know, you typically, if you're developing for a serverless environment, you're constrained by that environment. But I believe that that kind of constraint on development is a positive and is useful, because so much of the work of building a software application from scratch goes into the fundamental decisions of what languages and libraries and foundational technologies you're using. The more of those decisions, most of the time, that are taken away from you, the better. You know, the more you can focus on actually the task that you have, the logic that you want to code, the business value you're trying to create. So I think in the long term, we'll also see that emerge as a big productivity benefit for development teams. That's, I think, potentially huge.
Nick, let's transition and talk a little bit about the technology now, in that there's a focus in the industry right now around serverless and all different aspects, variations of it. And you recently did a piece called The Futile Resistance to Serverless. And one of the things that I wonder about is the industry has done a good job of messaging serverless is for DevOps. Does that mean serverless is only for DevOps?
I think it's really the opposite. I think serverless obviates so much of DevOps that the DevOps community is actually one of the sources of resistance. I think, you know, and it's not just that they view serverless as a threat, although I think many do. It's also that, you know, they're invested in their craft, and their craft is about creating sort of the perfect tool chain for doing continuous deployment. And serverless implementations today, like, A, tend to be very opinionated and tend to be pretty rudimentary. So they look at them and they find them wanting, but I think that's a moment in time. So, I mean, I agree. I think it's the developer community that stands to benefit, and the DevOps community is kind of, it's a little bit of a threat to them.
Is there a bigger, broader world out there, life beyond DevOps?
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a fair characterization. I mean, generally, I think this is a time to be very like open to change and hungry for change. I think, you know, I think the opportunity is massive, and I think the caution in the industry is on the one hand understandable, and on the one other hand a bit unwarranted. And I think those who get out in front early, either if we're talking about individuals from a skills perspective or organizations from a capability perspective, will benefit greatly. So, you know, I would encourage everyone to, you know, really spend time, study the options for serverless development out there, start doing it, you know, invest in it, and really with a mindset not just of kicking the tires, but of embracing it as aggressively as possible, because I think this is like cloud in 2008, and, you know, there will be value to the early movers, so jump on it.
Appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule. Hope that you can come back and join us for some follow-up conversations, whether it's serverless, DevOps, life beyond DevOps, the bigger, broader world of serverless, business transformation, and all those different things. So really enjoyed having you on. Look forward to future conversations.
Sounds great. Look forward to it.
This is Greg Schultz from ServerStorage.io. Thank you all for listening in on today's podcast. And again, thanks to our guest, Nick Rockwell, CTO and CIO of New York Times. You can check him out on Twitter at Nick Rockswell. And check out his post, Futile Resistance to Serverless, among other great topics, tying in technology, but also from that business aspect. This is Greg Schultz from ServerStorage.io saying, okay, enough said.